everybody. Welcome to the Poetry Blog. This is take 5, FYI, in night with it raining during MLA.
Yes.
Cameron's been very kind in sitting through it with me.
Hello, I am Cameron Ockrodrich. Recently, I have this book, which just came out into the world. It's called Dispatch, and it's a collection of poems put out by Persea Press. I think that I'm supposed to say where you can find me on the internet. I have a website, which is caockrodrich.com. And also, theoretically, I'm on Twitter and Instagram at @cockward_rich, but I'm really bad at social media, so...
Will you read for us?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
I'm gonna read a sort of longish prose sequence that I think is, like, the most opaque part of this book, because hopefully it will give us some stuff to talk about. And it's called Black Feeling. And after that, even the whirring of your head goes quiet. Even your breath. No sound. Someone in workshop says something like, in Italian, stanza means room. Don't roll your eyes. Here you are in a room. Here you are with things, but no names for things. You've been in the city for weeks now, and no one knows your name. No one except the man at the bus stop with his tall boy, his paper bag. When he asks, you tell him you work at the university, you teach. He was a cop till someone died and he found the bottle. Or the drink came first and then the falling off this umber world. In this moment, you're a man to him, some kind of boy genius philosopher who knows. There's something neither one of you can say. You're circling like animals, like prey. The truth is, most black folk look at you and see a woman. White people look at you and see a reckless boy. Either way, there you are in the room with your body. Everywhere, the bus is a kind of underworld. The man lives there, but you are just a passenger. He clears a space, says, sit. You can't sit. He looks at you with so much gratitude, you think you'll die. You have to understand that there are many rooms. Each of them operates by other laws. Here, once you name a thing, you can't take it back. It has its own life now, one that moves along without concern for you. At first, you go around talking to the trees, and for just a moment, they turn to face you. By the time the bus arrives, the light has gone, and the man is holding out his hand. You take it, not expecting to be thrown against him. Against him, you are years ago a frantic girl alone. The man is on his knees. You are a boy holding up his brother. The man is on his knees. Either way, there you are in the room with your body, your one wet face. Oh, God of the loophole, God of the veil, the break, the fugitive in endless flight. Somewhere, there's a room where things go to lose their names. A rose becomes, a daughter becomes, her son. Unlocking your apartment, you realize you never caught his name. He just looked at you and saw a door. He can't walk back through, but there you were, an image racing on the other side.
That was so good.
Thank you.
Something actually, I'm really glad you chose that sequence, because something that kind of astounds me about it is how it's both kind of teasing the reader a bit in terms of talking about like how we process images in poetry and in the real world and using the narrative form, but then also being like insistently in that break space of the poem. So I'm glad you wrote that one.
Thank you.
And that you read it. Obviously, but glad you also read it. I have a couple of questions.
Great.
So the first one is, why did you choose that poem today?
Yeah, I chose that poem because it is one of the poems from the book that is in the world, so it's one that, without having to buy the book, one can read. I think that I also chose it because it's the poem in the book that I feel least certain of what it's about, which means that it's a poem that I'm still sort of interested in and trying to figure out, like, what is the thing that it is about? What are the questions that it's asking? What are the ways that it's approaching answers?
What do you mean by about, right? And like, what do you mean by what a poem could be about?
Mm-hmm.
And what do you mean by you're still trying to figure out what it's about?
Yeah.
Which you can obviously be like, fuck you, I just said, I don't know, but also like curious about the interrogation of that.
I guess what I mean is that, like, like, in some literal way, it's a poem about, like, a weird encounter at a bus stop with a man. But that obviously it also is asking questions about what does it mean to encounter another person? How does race and gender mediate our encounters with other people? What does it mean to inhabit the break, right? And I think that I often sort of have theories about my poems before I put them into the world, right? I have theories about, like, this is about my cat, but it's, like, also a kind of theory about, I don't know, human-animal relationality or something like this. But I'm not sure that I like, know, actually, what this poem is about. So I often read it in order to try to figure that out. I guess the final thing I would say is that I think that I use my... So I'm a poet, but I'm also a kind of academic theorist in one way or another. And I think that my poems often tend to be the place where I first am working out things that I will later argue, right, and try to defend. And I think that there's something going on in this poem, which is about sort of an encounter between something like Afro-pessimism and, like, trans theory. But I don't know exactly what it is, and I know that this is what eventually I will write a book about it, you know? So I think that it feels like I need to figure out what the poem is trying to say.
I see.
Yeah.
I actually like that articulation of it, too, because for folks watching, we were talking earlier about that experience of, like, sometimes you work out the idea in the poem first, and precisely because it's not worked out fully, but you started working it out, you're able to later work it out in a theory or argument form, and kind of going back to that space repeatedly. The second question I have is, how does this poem... So, I'm going to totally backtrack and mention that I already know that you're wanting to talk about university, institutional, the thing, and kind of, like, creative work and your thoughts on that. So, the second question is not technically about your poem, but I'm guessing you'll tie it back to your poem.
Sure, I can try. One of the kind of, like, sub, kind of, like, narrative things about this poem is that I was writing it when I lived in Durham, North Carolina, for 1 year, and I was there because I had this postdoc, and it was my first sort of job after graduate school. And I think that being in Durham, it was very strange. I mean, it's always strange to be in a new space and to have to figure it out, but one of the things that I was trying to figure out while I was there was, like, what does it mean to be no longer a student in, like, an institutional way, right? I mean, I think that there's, like, this romantic thing academics like to say about, like, being perpetually a student, but, like, it's, like, a meaningful difference to be in a kind of institutional role of being, if not exactly faculty, then definitely no longer a student. And I was, I think one of the things that I was trying to think about in that poem was, like, not only is it how do race and gender mediate one's encounters with others, but, like, how does the fact of, like, definitely having more power than man at the bus stop by virtue of being
a paid academic
at, like, a fancy pants school, how does that play into this encounter, which I think is, like, very easy to read, actually, as just sort of, like, trans person encounters, like, X cup. You know? So, I mean, literally, the sort of encounter that I'm narrating is a sort of really bizarre exchange I had at this bus stop with this older black man who used to be a cop, had, like, sort of fallen on hard times, but he was telling me this story about how he had, like, he was telling a story about basically how he had killed somebody as a cop, and then had sort of, like, thrown him into, like, a kind of depression, and, like, this is how he had ended up at this bus stop. To me, right, what it felt like was a kind of weird toggling between, like, an old black man looking at, like, a young black boy and being like, let me tell you about life, son. But I think that because of my kind of lived experience as, like, having been, like, a teenage girl in similar kinds of encounters with, like, older men who solicit my time and attention in ways that were, like, definitely, like,
sexist.
Well, yeah, we're sexist, we're, like, violent in some ways, you know.
Yeah.
It was, like, a weird moment of kind of trying to, like, think about, okay, like, what is the power here?
Yeah. So I'm wondering if you'd be willing to talk a little bit more about the kind of complex, maybe even like anxious is what we've talked about, experience then of both having to critique the institutions that create the violences that you're experiencing while also operate within them.
That poem is sort of an essay. It's kind of like residual from my first book, which was full of these like prose poems that I called essays. And people would always ask me the question, like, what is the relationship in your head between poetry and essay? And I would always give this answer that was sort of like, well, in an essay you have to, like, defend your claim, and in a poem you can just kind of find the most resonant bit and put it out there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that what this poem or what poetry in general kind of lets me do is not have an answer, right?
Yeah.
Is to think about that anxious space and to think about the kind of multiplicity of power in the sort of moment at the bus stop, or also the moment in like faculty meeting or whatever,
mm-hmm.
right? It lets me occupy multiple things at once. I mean, this is gonna sound strange, and I'm not sure that I believe it, but I'm gonna like test out a theory, which
okay.
is that like I do think it's true that one of the things that like certain kinds of critical race studies, especially after intersectionality, want to insist on is that, like, you can't separate race from sex from gender, etc. And certainly this is true, but something else that's true is that those experiences, like the experience of being a Black person and the experience of being a trans person, like, even though obviously I am both of those things, like, there are ways in which being read as Black, like in this moment with this man, right? Being
right.
read as a Black boy, like, tears me away, actually, from the experience of, like, having been a Black girl.
Yeah.
I think that there's a way in which, like, it actually is just the case that even though, obviously, systems of power are operating in intersecting ways, the way that they are experienced often, like, creates disjuncture
yeah.
and rupture and the feeling of being sort of torn into like many different parts.
Yeah.
And I think that what poetry lets me do, like by virtue of the fact that like the lyric eye doesn't have to be stable or by virtue of the fact that like, I don't know, there's like that nice phrase about poetry being about like interiority made public or whatever, right? It's like in a way, like poems require a kind of split subject,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
They sort of require a kind of paradox, right, between
mm-hmm.
absolute interiority made public. So I think that there's like a thing that like poetry lets me inhabit these like sort of multiple things at once, right? And
yeah.
I mean, I think that that's one of the things that's going
yeah,
on
yeah.
in that poem.
Even contradictory things
yeah.
at once in
yeah.
a way that maybe like essay, nonfiction, narrative form on their own wouldn't allow.
Yeah. Wouldn't allow, and also, I mean, I think that there's, like, I think that, like, even if most sort of academics would believe or make the case that, like, yes, of course things are complicated, it's also true that, like, the way that the market for
mm-hmm.
ideas works is that, like, you have to pretend, at least,
yeah.
right, to be making a strong claim or to have fixed
yeah.
a problem, resolved a problem.
Yeah.
And that's just, like, not the case in poetry, right?
Yeah.
like...
Well, okay, so this we can debate a little bit.
Okay.
Because I feel like what I love about poetry is it doesn't have to do that. Mm-hmm. That's what poetry, I mean, I feel like people that have kept up with the show are like tired of hearing me say it, but what I love about poetry is quite similar. Like, you can have like multiple versions of yourself present and unresolved, mm-hmm. and you don't have to have the answer, you don't have to describe, you don't have to explain it, there doesn't have to be. But at the same time, I would posit that poetry gets kind of engulfed mm-hmm. by a lot of things it resists when its circulation depends on the particular poem being distilled into an argument everyone can, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So for me, what's fascinating about the poem you read is it does resist that kind of commodification and distillation of identity into this singular experience that people can label as like black, trans, mm-hmm. queer, age, mm-hmm. and instead it's like there's these multiple moments of embodiment and different relations happening that don't, that kind of escape that kind of categorization mm-hmm. and remain yours. Mm-hmm. Thank you for being on this program today.
Of course, thank you for having me.
Thank you for sharing authentically and sharing your experience and talking about it. And everyone for watching, thank you for viewing. I want to give a quick plug that you should definitely buy the book. It's a fabulous book. And I like to see a press too, so like bonus points to support both. Mm-hmm. The poem's available online, which means that there's a link in the description to go read it. And we'll also, if you listen to the podcast edition, have images pop up on the screen if you find that visual aids assist in kind of understanding the topics today. Vice versa, if you listen to the YouTube edition, you're like, why did I just watch this instead of listen to it? There's a podcast edition of it. So you can find that at thepoetryblog.com or just search for it with your thumbs or your fingers wherever there's a podcast. Quick plug, shamey kind of way I want to put in, is on the website, we have a new student working with us on it, and by the time you all get this episode, we have an archive of the videos based on topic. Mm-hmm. So if you're an instructor or you're a student and you're like, I want to hear more from like queer poets, trans poets, white poets, hardly doubt you need to hear from them, whatever it is, there's not going to be a white poets category, let me say that now, I think that my students will be like, we have to create a white poets category now.
No, I mean, I'm only sort of serious, but I do think, that it's true that, like, one of the ways that whiteness operates is by trying to pretend like it doesn't exist.
And everything else is,
So,
I agree with that. Nevertheless, in terms of archiving, you can hit up Google for plenty of white poets, and this is now going a whole different direction.
I can behave.
You're good. Because I actually agree with you.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, wait, now I'm supposed to wrap up and I have to explain that to students. This is actually a productive conversation because I completely agree. And I think race studies is also the study of whiteness and people don't like saying that.
Yeah.
Right? And they just are like, no, everything else is other and whiteness is the original human and blah, 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 blah. And that's how it operates. 100% agree. So I'm going to cut the entire tangent over the white archive and basically just say content oriented. Craft ones, so if you're interested in craft conversations, just in general, it's at thepoetryvlog.com. We're pretty proud of it. I'm wildly impressed with the students that were working on the project, so make sure you check out the About Them. Go send them a shout.